The Minnesota GOP convention has fireworks about a month early at the state convention. It was quite a weekend, but was anything really decided? President Trump says fireworks will soon be on the way if the Iranians don't agree to end the war. And a Minnesota bishop is causing fireworks by saying he supports President Trump's crackdown on immigration. How dare he? Who was that that had that now famous quote? How dare you? Was that Greta, the climate change girl? How dare you? How dare this bishop talk about the border and how we prevented human trafficking? There are a few among us, friends, who still have the courage to speak the truth. Good morning. It's great to be with you here on the Steve Alstrom Show. Glad to be alive here today. Glad to be alive for a couple different reasons. Number one, it's just better than the alternative. Second of all, there was a part, I was running the half marathon on Saturday, and I tried to push it. I was gunning for my best time ever, and me being the bullheaded sort, I knew it was warm. I knew it was humid. I saw it was 71 at the start at 7 o'clock, but I was determined. I had trained a little bit for this race, and I'm like, I want to be 58 and say I ran my fastest half marathon ever. And this would have been either the 13th or 14th half marathon that I've done. And so obviously I started doing this when I was quite a bit younger. And I'm like, wouldn't that be great? And so here I was going at it, and then at about mile 10, my lungs felt like they were going to explode. And part of it was if you were out Saturday morning, you did not think to yourself, man, it's hot here. But for those of us who are running and who had trained in 50-degree weather at 7 o'clock in the morning, to have it be 71 was a little difficult. And then it was really humid as well. So the combination of the both, if you were spending your morning in zone 4 or zone 5, where I kind of was right then, it was hot and it was humid. It was hard to breathe. And the old lungs are not in peak form quite yet. Hopefully that'll be the case in September after a full summer of training. But I'm going to keep going. But if I start feeling like I'm going to tip over, I'm just going to stop. And I don't know that I've ever been at that point where you have that doubt in the back of your mind. That's not a good place to be. I kept pushing it, and I got a little woozy. Kind of lost track of the time, lost track of the pace sign guy, and I checked my watch to see what I was pacing, and I couldn't do math, and that, which tells you maybe I should have stopped. But I'm trying to do the math in my head about, okay, I've been running now for 1 hour and 44 minutes, and I've got like 1 mile to go, and I wanted to get 1:52.18. That was my all-time best, or that would have been my all-time best. And I couldn't do the math. And so I just kept going. And afterwards, I was remarkably good at the finish. I've had some finishes where I've been a disaster, medical tent, blah, blah, blah. But I guess I had trained well enough, and I was sucking down the goo. And so that all helped for sure. But boy, it was tough the last couple of miles. And a lot of people I know who were running the full marathon were doing really good until mile 20, 21, 22. And then they just hit a wall. And it's just what happens. They've moved this marathon back to basically June. And you're going to have days like this that happen more often. I remember years when we were starting out of the Fargo Dome and you came out and it was snowing sideways because May 10th or whatever, you can have that. You're not going to have that in June. So they're either going to have to move this marathon back or they're going to have more things like this. And I don't think we lost any good men out there, but I know there were a lot of people in the medical tent, and I believe that a couple of them had to be taken to local hospitals. They need to move this thing back. They just do. I'm sorry. I know for the fans and spectators and volunteers, it's a little easier when it's, 55, 60 most years rather than 45, 50. But you're playing with fire when you do this. And we need to do that. Whatever it takes. I mean, if you got to get the Fargo Dome again, rent the Fargo Dome again, charge people $10 more on their registration fee. But doing it the way they're doing it. Days like today or days like Saturday, yes, it was uncommon, but this is not the last time you're going to have this. So glad to be here with you today. We got a full show. Speaking of crazy, whatever happened running on Saturday does not hold a candle to what happened in Duluth at the Minnesota State GOP convention. And again, I ask this question, are these conventions, do they even matter anymore? And it's not because my favorite candidates didn't get endorsed. It's just the process. And looking forward to what's going to happen now in the primaries, I'd be surprised if either of the two big nominees end up winning. I'd be very surprised. So you just wonder what's happening with these conventions. And I know a few of you were there because you've called me, texted me, emailed me along the way. But the voting mechanisms broke down, and there was somebody made a motion that none of these endorsements should be binding. Oh my gosh, makes you think maybe going back to old fashioned paper and pencil, even at the Republican State Convention, might be the way to go. So lots to cover here on the show today. We'll talk about the latest in the war, which is just more of the same in my mind. I don't know, you guys. I'm trying to stay positive about all this, but it's getting harder for me. It is. And the president is continuing to talk about, I think they're going to agree to this, or they've basically agreed to that. And I say, what does that mean? Does that count for anything at all? And I still feel like at some point, this is going to require us to go in and, I'm sorry, kill a lot of people. And we're going to lose a few of our own. But there does not seem to be any other way to effectively accomplish anything that means anything without doing that. I wish it wasn't that way. But I support the president, stand by him, and I'm going to say, Mr. President, we're trusting you on this one. But I don't like when I hear him say things like, well, they are going to agree to, or we think that they've agreed to that. They're not going to agree to anything that they're going to stand by. And he knows that, and he keeps saying it anyway, and I don't know why. So we got a lot of ground to cover here. Let's get to it here with the Morning Wire semi-automatic storylines as we give you a rapid-fire rundown of the world around us here on this Monday, June 1st, 2026. How about that? May is in the books. Doesn't even seem possible already. But here we go. We will gain 1 minute today and, come on, 31 seconds of daylight. Sunset will be 9:14 in Fargo today. Love this time of year. Markets are down across the board today. I don't think the traders really know what to make of anything. The war and how that affects interest rates and bond yields, that is everything in the market. I just don't think anybody knows what to make of any of this. So everything's down, not much, just like a fraction of a percent, but market really going nowhere this morning. WTI crude oil has gone back up above $90 a barrel. We're now at $94.06. So oil jumping about 6%. Iran is talking tough about completely blocking the strait and not going to talk with the U.S. anymore. And I don't know, people listening to the president again saying, I think they're going to agree to something, and thinking, are they really going to agree to anything that matters? I just think all that's mattering today. Gold down $109 an ounce today. Silver down $1.63. Bitcoin today down $2,000 at $71,516. I think people that own Bitcoin are selling and buying tech stocks because it's kind of the same crowd that does a little bit of both. I think that's what's going on here. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas today, $4.32. That's actually down 9 cents from Friday. So we've seen some good things happening there. But with the rebound today, we might see that start to move the other direction. North Dakota, $3.99, so that's nice. We're back under $4 a gallon. South Dakota, Minnesota, though, both over $4 a gallon. South Dakota, $4.14. Minnesota at $4.12. And that gives you a look at what is happening today in the commodities and the markets. Take a look at news headlines here today. President Trump continues to voice optimism for diplomacy, saying on True Social, Iran really wants to make a deal. He urged critics, reports CBS News, to sit back and relax. It'll all work out in the end. So maybe he's sending that my direction here today. He commented after the U.S. military said a new round of self-defense strikes hit Iranian radar and drone sites in response to aggressive Iranian actions. So defensive strikes is what they're being called today. Iran responded to the U.S. strikes by firing 2 missiles at American forces in Kuwait, both of which U.S. Central Command said were intercepted. Former Navy SEAL Adam Schwartzy has secured the GOP endorsement for the open U.S. Senate seat, clinching 62% of the vote on the sixth ballot over former sports broadcaster Michelle Tafoya. And this is definitely story of the day. Much more on this coming up in just a few minutes here on the Steve Holstrom Show. Don't go away. Get out of town. No, really, get out of town. And the good folks at Travel Travel can help you get there. They always have great travel deals on really cool places. And, wow, Cindy's got a nifty one for us here today. Cannot wait to hear more about this one. Good morning, young lady. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday to you, too. So tell us about the America's Canyonland Escape. This sounds like fun.
Right. Yeah, we've got, we've had a lot of questions. There are a lot of people looking for just stuff right here in the United States, especially being we're like celebrating 250 years. So we came up with a great deal. It's a guided tour leading out of Las Vegas to some of our national parks, going from the Zion National Park, Bryce National Park, and going for 7 days. You even get a four-wheel drive excursion, going through the Navajo guide in Monument Valley. So yeah, it's filled, filled packed through 7 days. And we have a great deal, price of, hang on, let me get it. My computer just shut down for me. I apologize.
Oh, that happens all the time here too, Cindy. We get that. So this is a 7-day tour and it's coming up in November. And the price is fantastic. You're going to love the price on this one. And the airfare is, many times you get a package price for everything here. On this one, the airfare is additional. So we want to make sure that we're clear about that one, too. Cindy, have you got what you need there?
Yes, I do. Yes, it is in November, November 15th, and it is all for the great price. This is based off of double occupancy of $2,049 per person. And so that's 7 nights or 7 days, 6-night tour.
That's a great one. Now, it says in your note to me today that airfare and insurance are additional. Tell me about that.
Yes, because we have so many people coming from wherever, and depending on the dates or coming from what city, we did not add the airfare at this time or the insurance. So you can leave out of Grand Forks, Fargo, or actually out of Minneapolis or any place. If you have friends that want to meet you from Phoenix, we can get you there as well.
Oh, okay. Fun stuff there. If you want to find out more about this, very easy to get a hold of them and get your questions answered. 701-492-5000. Katie or Cindy, Heidi, the ladies would be happy to help you out there. Or you can go to traveltravelgroup.com, traveltravelgroup.com. Travel leaders, they do it well. Nobody better, and they have great ideas for us every week here on the Steve Holstrom Show. Hey, thank you, Cindy, for giving us the details on this one today. Have a great rest of the day.
You too. Thank you.
All right, take care. Yeah, never too early to start thinking about those fun trips coming up later this year. All right, before we get to story of the day, I want to check in on the phone lines here. Our friend Michelle Turnberg has given us a call on the Steve Holstrom Show. And, boy, things are getting down to the home stretch here in the nitty gritty. Yes. And so you're going to have a little fun and kick back and have a good time. You're throwing a party, you're telling me.
We are. But first, tonight we are going door knocking. So if anyone would like to join us, we'll be meeting at 5:30 at Americans for Prosperity. That's 4342 15th Avenue South in Fargo. So we'll be meeting there, and then it'll be well planned out. We'll send teams out across town. We've got campaign T-shirts. We've got information to give people. We just really want to encourage people to get out and vote.
All right. Sounds good. And then you've got a little ditty coming up here where people
yes.
can meet some of the candidates, too.
Yes. And then we're going to have an election kickoff party, because early voting starts tomorrow. So if you won't be in town or you would just like to get it done before Election Day, you can early vote tomorrow. So So our party will be at Excalibur up in North Fargo from 6 to 10. It is for all ages, so bring the kids. There's bowling, arcade games. We'll have food, and a lot of the candidates, conservative candidates, will be there. We're just really excited to talk to people. If anyone has questions, if you're still undecided and need an answer, we're all happy to do that.
Okay.
And I believe it's the old Red River Lane.
Oh, okay.
It's now called Excalibur.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that's tomorrow night, you said?
Yes, that's tomorrow. Tonight is door knocking.
Okay, sounds good. Michelle, thanks for the update. Always good to hear what's happening on the trail, so you take care.
All right, have a wonderful week, Steve.
Thanks a lot. Yep, you too. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
All right, 25 past the hour here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. And, yeah, I can tell you that when I was running the half marathon course on Saturday, that I saw a lot of Michelle Turnberg signs in the downtown area. And there were a lot of Josh Boshay signs, too. Now, if I have to give you an honest summary of this, I would say I think probably Josh signs outnumbered Michelle signs about 2-1, maybe 3-1. But down in the south suburbs, kind of where I live, it's like 2-3-1 for Michelle. So, but if you were running that course, you probably feel like, oh, God, everybody's going to vote for Josh. I did not see, I don't know if I saw any signs for Dave other than the billboard. And I think Dave's got a lot to run on. I wish I saw more Dave signs out there. Because I think he's a really strong candidate in this thing. I saw just a couple Denise signs. I saw no signs for Sekou, but not many for Denise. So that's just a little bit of commentary on the sign game, if you will, here. Steve, it's all about the nuclear weapons. If you can't talk positively about this, get off the air. Well, okay, so here's the thing. It's not my job to talk positively about this. I'm here to tell you what I see and analyze what's happening and tell you where I think that there are concerns and where I think there are opportunities, where I think there are strengths and weaknesses. And that's not always going to be that I'm cheering for the home team. Now, do I hope for good things? Absolutely. But I'm not going to lie to you and sit here and say, oh, yeah, it's all, don't worry, there's no problems here at all. When I have a president who's telling me that, hey, we think we're going to agree to something, and because of it, we're going to accomplish our purposes in Iran. That doesn't compute in my mind to a successful formula. So I'm sorry that I'm not going to sit here and say that the president is perfect, never makes a mistake. I think he's right 100% of the time. That's not me. But what you can get out of that is when I do say something that I feel like the president is doing well, and he's doing a lot of things very well, a lot of things. And the things, even some things that aren't going well, he's doing for the right reasons. But can you, whoever Mr. or Ms. Texter you are, whoever you are, can you really say that you think the communication that's coming makes sense to you from the White House on this one? Because it doesn't make any sense to me as I just try to think through how is this going to happen. Again, what we were told is, and I don't care about the 5-6 weeks thing. That I know a lot of people are like, well, you know, Trump's lying to us. I get that. War is messy. It's going to take a while to get this thing figured out. But we got a lot of work to do. I'm going to finish that on the other side. Don't go away. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com. That's Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. Seeing a lot of those spiffy Lincolns driving around Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo. They're all coming from Wahpeton. And once you drive one, you'll know why. Just a really cool vehicle. They're so well made, really high-end stuff. And the prices, you get a lot of car, truck, SUV for the money. Check them out, drivewithvision.com. You can call me at 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. And by the way, Michelle called, I think that's smart campaigning, a few minutes ago, just to say, hey, just want everybody to know, because the phone lines are open. Any candidate can call us and say, hey, just I'm not going to give you 10 minutes, but if you want to say, hey, I just want you to know we're having a little get together. Absolutely. And there may be people that want to hear from you and get together and come to your parties and knock on the doors with you and all that stuff. So 271-1100, it's open for everybody. But they have recently expanded at Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness, and they can get you in fast. Counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, nurse practitioner. Make an appointment, get in this week at valleychristian.co. That's the text line as well, 701-271-1100. Let me finish my thought here on the war in Iran. I have said from the beginning, this is a war. I don't care what you want to call it. In my mind, this is a war. We're doing naval blockade. We're shooting each other back and forth. There are lives lost, troops, billions of dollars. This is a war. And the only way to accomplish what the president set out to do, and these are all basically words that came from his administration along the way here, is that we've got to do three things. And if we don't do any one of these three things, then we can't say that we have done what needed to be done to go in there and get the job done. Number one, we have to get the leadership. That means that more people are going to have to die. But the people that are in there already are the people that are dropping landmines in the strait. Well, what does that tell you? You've got to be able to get all of these people or as many of them as possible. Is that hard? Yes. But that is what you signed up for when you went into Iran. It's a big country. There's a lot of places for people to hide. But you've got to do it. You've got to get this leadership, because as long as that leadership is in, it'll only be a matter of months, maybe a couple of years, and we're going to do this all over again. And then what was this all for? So we need to get rid of the regime. We need to get the uranium, all of it, the processed stuff and the raw stuff. Otherwise, they're going to be able to start producing again. We thought Midnight Hammer was going to end that, and apparently it didn't. Okay, so we were wrong. That's all right. We've all been wrong on things before. But now if we're going to go in and start a war over this, well, then we probably need to get all the uranium. The enriched stuff, the unprocessed, it all needs to go, right? I mean, am I wrong on any of this? You tell me. But if we don't get the uranium and we just say, okay, well, we're gonna go for something else. I mean, the president's been very clear about that. They cannot have the uranium. And he talks a lot about the process, the enriched stuff, or the dust, as they call it. But if you don't get the uranium that is raw there, they're going to be able to kind of reconstitute the machine, okay? So you got to get all the uranium. As much as you think they have, you got to get it or destroy it so they can't get it. And number three, you have to destroy the equipment and technology that they're using. And if you don't do that, then, okay, well, great. We think we got all the uranium, but who knows? They have more hidden somewhere, and they've got the stuff to just fire up the machinery again to make it happen. So I don't like any of this I'm telling you, because it's all very, very complicated. And it's messy. And it's all, I don't want to say it's impossible. I don't want to say almost impossible, but very difficult to do all this. But again, when the president went in to do this, he knew that's what would constitute success. And these people are not ones that they'll say, yes, we're going to do something, you can trust him to do it. We know that. And the president does as well. The president is not naive. The president's very smart. He gets all that. Yet he continues to say, I think they're going to agree to a deal. And all I'm telling you is the president knows deep down that whatever they say they're going to do, they're not going to do. So you've got to go forward on these three things I'm talking about and finish the job. I don't know how he's going to do it, but if anybody can do it, I trust this guy can get the job done. I do, if anybody can. But this is a sticky, messy, protracted situation. And there's nobody that will believe the Iranians if they say, yep, we're done. We're done fighting. We'll sign this document. We're not going to do any of this. And the president will not agree to end this conflict without some kind of proof, because he knows better than to take what they say at their word. And the ugly thing about this is that none of this can happen without troops. on the ground in Iran. And I know I get emails from a lot of you who say, stop saying boots on the ground. We don't want that. I know. I don't either. But what is the alternative here? You think you can do all of this stuff we're talking about without having any troops there trying to find people and things underground? This stuff isn't sitting out on someone's kitchen table or at the market at the county fair. They've got to go to the places that are going to be required to get this. And maybe they can do it with artillery. I don't know. It makes me very uneasy. And I'm bullish on this president. I'm bullish on this country. But on this one item here, it's starting to look very, very complicated to me. And I don't like when I hear things about, well, they say they're going to do this or going to agree to it, because the president deep down knows that that doesn't mean anything. All right. I want to talk about the West Fargo roundabout story. And I have to admit to you, I hadn't heard anything about this, but I started last week to get emails from something called the Wilds Connect. And this is a group of people that makes really nice graphics and emails. And they're talking about showing up tonight at the city commission meeting. You have to register to speak by noon today. And they want you to oppose the roundabout and oppose special assessments. And I got this email from a regular listener of the program. It said, Steve, there's a neighbor in Southwest Fargo that could use your assistance fighting City Hall. November 23, they came together to protect their children from a roundabout at the intersection of 9th Street and 52nd Avenue. We're able to convince the city it was not a good idea. Unfortunately, then Commissioner Mark Simmons understood it to be a financial issue to the homeowners, not a child safety issue, tasked the city engineering department with finding funding for this same roundabout. They were able to get a $2 million grant. So the city's now bringing it back to the table. The residents whose children have to cross there to attend their elementary school are not happy that this is still being looked at, since it's being considered, and there have been concerns all along. Since the meeting agenda for tonight's meeting was published on Friday, they've been going door to door to inform and encourage residents to show up at tonight's meeting. 1,300 households will be affected by this improvement district. In the last week or so, they've created a website and Facebook page, thewildsconnect.com, specifically dedicated to informing residents. All right, I don't know much about this story other than this listener says, I implore you, please don't let the social issues of Fargo continue to dominate your focus. So, okay, I have not heard about this. I'm passing it along. And Fargo is a city that needs saving. So that's why the fight there for Fargo. So J.T. Thaden sitting in for Addison here today. Is Addison getting a little extended time? J.T., you live out that way? Did I hear you say this earlier?
Yeah,
do you have any insight?
This is actually in West Fargo, 52nd Avenue.
Yes, sir.
Way out. I live like two blocks away from there, basically a block away from where they're going to put in the New Hope South Church.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that, too.
Yeah. And yeah, they tried to put this roundabout in a year or so ago, and you know the intersection that they're talking about is busy twice a day, in the morning and in the afternoon / evening when kids are coming and going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Stop sign works great.
Okay.
From a financial standpoint, putting in a $3 million roundabout or however many millions it's going to cost doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. From a bigger city planning master plan, I suppose that probably makes sense somewhere on somebody's spreadsheet and master plans, but the stop sign makes the most sense for me right now, just from a safety standpoint and a cost standpoint. Lots of kids trying to cross 52nd Avenue right there to get to the school.
Yeah, that's a busy area. No, that's round, not just your back street there.
Roundabouts, at least to me, are meant for cars to just continually go through.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got kids that are going to need to cross the street anyway, the cars are going to have to stop. You might as well just leave it the way it is. But
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there's something that we don't know that the city knows. So,
well, very possible. I tend not to give the benefit of the doubt to cities. I like individuals a little bit more. So, but that could very well be. And so there you go. So there's a little bit from an academic perspective, and then from someone who lives in that area as well.
I'll just tell you this. I don't like getting more bills in the mail. So,
yeah, funny. Funny how that works. Well, and a stop sign is what? A couple hundred bucks, right?
I don't know. It seems like the common sense thing to do. It's already there. Everything seems to be working just fine. But I don't know.
Okay. I want to also, I'm cramming a lot in a short amount of time here today. So feel free, phone line, text line, 271-1100, email to add to this. But the forum has put out its editorial choices on who they want for mayor and city commission in Fargo. They're going with Denise Kolpak for mayor, which is a surprising, maybe, I guess not. She knows the system. She has a good presentation. I don't like her voting record. I think she's a wonderful human being, but I don't think she's the best choice for mayor because of the issues that affect the city and her stances on them. She will keep all the drug stuff going and all the homeless advocacy stuff and all of that. And those things just, they don't work in the city. They haven't and they don't. But they went with Denise Kolpak for mayor. And then on city commission, they went with Nikki Gullickson and Chad Peterson. Chad Peterson seems to me to be a very good choice here. I don't know a lot about Nikki's stances on things, even after doing a debate. A couple of her answers were, I don't know, I'll have to find that out, which it's honest, and I appreciate that. But I thought maybe she could have had a little bit more background on the way in there. The first sentence of the forum's editorial endorsing her says she would like to establish more professionalism on the city commission, focusing on the topics and not the personalities. Please, people. The problem with Fargo is not the personality fights on the commission. The problem is the ideas that they have had in the majority on what create a successful community don't work. And they're 1.3. How does a city get $1.3 billion in debt? But those are the endorsements. More after this. If you are hoping for either Dave Pepcorn or Michelle Turnberg to be the next mayor of the city of Fargo, I think the forum endorsement is probably good news for you. It has been my impression that Josh will, I could be wrong on this. It's really hard to know what's going to happen in a city election, but it's been my impression just from message board traffic, comments on news stories and things like that. My impression is that Josh is going to outvote Denise in the election. And to me, I feel like Josh and Denise, they gave very similar answers to almost all of the issue-related questions in the debate. I feel like they are along the same vein and that they're kind of fighting it out for their people. And then I feel like Dave and Michelle are doing the same thing on the other side. And then you got Sekou, who's thought Mamdani was the leader we should all emulate. So I don't, as goofy as Fargo can get, I don't think we're ready for that. I don't think we're quite that goofy yet. So you've got this fascinating race. I cannot wait to see what happens. But on local elections, it's hard. There's not polling out there. Nobody really can tell who all is going to show up. It's hard to know who's going to motivate their people. But if you are hoping that either Dave or Michelle can beat Josh, then I think the Kolpak endorsement by the forum probably helps you. If you believe that Denise is the front runner, though, on that side, which I guess that's possible, then this is not a good thing for you. So I just think as much if you are on the left and you want some infighting on the right between Michelle and Dave, you want things like endorsements to come their way. And that didn't happen today. If you're on the other side and want the lefties to kind of battle it out, I know Denise, it drives her nuts when we say that she's a liberal or a lefty, but I just, we pay attention to your voting record, Denise, and we see what you're willing to accept when it comes to government spending. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. None of these things are personal. I think all these things are wonderful people. I'd sit down and have a beer with all these people. Maybe except Sekou. If you're going to vote for Mom Donnie, I don't know if I want to. Decent enough guy, but man, oh man. And when he says in the debate, he goes, Sekou, he's got some new ideas. Like, no, he doesn't. He has ideas that have been proven to ruin countries in the past and completely destroy innovation and development and growth. These are not new ideas. They are just a little bit new in our part of the world. So, boy, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. A week from tomorrow night, they will add up all the votes. This is going to be interesting. We will see. All right, let me give you a couple of things here that I wanted to clean up before we got to the top of the hour. First of all, early voting begins tomorrow. Five locations through Friday. Four of them are also open on Saturday. Three in Fargo, one in West Fargo, one in Castleton. Go to our website, am1100theflag.com, to find out more. And I will just tell you, friend, if you are who I think you are, listening to this show, there's a few of you that I don't know about, but most of you listening to this show are faith, family, freedom people who like small government and big people. Remember the old Paul Harvey line? The government got bigger and bigger, and the people got littler and littler. That's what's happened, and it's happening in Fargo. Yes, we love you, West Fargo. There's some good people over there looking at those, but the city of Fargo needs saving. We are on a collision course with, I don't know what, bad things. If you believe that, as I do, you need to do something. Not just go vote. You need to bring people with you. You need to talk to your friends. You need to strike up some of those conversations with your neighbors who you're not sure, but you heard them say one time that I don't like taxes or whatever. Take that chance and have that conversation. This election will be determined by who gets their people out. There are strong candidates on, no matter how you look at it. If you are a liberal, there are strong candidates who will fight for you. If you are a conservative, there are strong candidates who fight for you. If you're a communist, there's a strong candidate who will fight for you. You need to get out and vote, and you need to bring people with. I've talked to so many people over the last couple of years. I just talked to one last week, Thursday, Friday, said, you know what? I kind of have stopped caring if people like me or not. But we have to save our city, country. He was talking about the state of Minnesota. But there are people more and more who are willing to take positions politically because they realize that what we're doing isn't working anymore. And that needs to be how we approach this. That there are people who have who will never talk politics openly, who will never bring it up at the backyard barbecue or whatever, but they are listening and they are thinking and they realize that we are being taxed too much. We can't hand out 3 million drug needles to people. We can't be $1.3 billion in debt as a city. This has to stop. There are people that are willing to have that conversation now that would not have been willing to have that conversation even a year ago. So roll up your sleeves. Go out. You just heard Michelle Turnberg saying, we're looking for people to go door knocking. Find your candidate. And get them out and get out and support them and do what you can to help them. Because if we have four more years of let's just enable more things and spend more money on drug use for people and more spending like this, I don't know how you come back from four more years of that. Get your people out. You got to do it. Hour two of the program coming up next. Hour number two of the Steve Hallstrom Show is brought to you in part by PetroServe USA, who's cooking up some great food for you for lunch today. We got some Monday specials, my friends. Boy, all kinds of good stuff. Hot beef sandwiches, taco mac and cheese, meatloaf, cheese ravioli, Alfredo, chicken and gravy, Salisbury steak, chip beef, sloppy joes, beef noodles, all that stuff available at PetroServe USA locations around the region. And you can always find a great beverage and a treat to go along with that so you can finish off that meal. Great food, great specials at PetroServe USA, helping America feel better. Coming up in this hour of the program, I'm going to change things up just a little bit. Normally, I give you the key three, what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. And then in the second segment, we do best thing I heard all day. I'm going to change that up a little bit based on what happened in the Minnesota Republican State Convention on Friday and Saturday. There's a lot to talk about. And our friend A.K. Kamara, occasional guest on the program, has got some time today at 10:20. So I'm going to move Best Thing I Heard All Day up here to the first segment and give you some American pride to listen to here today. Before I do that, a couple of text messages I want to hit on because your voice definitely important on this program here each day, certainly today. we were talking about conventions, and it seems like more and more candidates go to a convention and one person gets selected by the delegates at the convention. Then you go to the primary and a different person wins altogether. And in many cases now, incumbents aren't even going to these conventions anymore. Certainly in North Dakota, I don't think a single incumbent went to the convention. And in Minnesota, a lot of incumbents didn't go to the conventions either. So I mentioned that. Are conventions losing their firepower, losing their credibility? I think so. I don't know that this is something that gives me a lot of satisfaction to say that, but when your candidates don't get to the finish line, how do you look at it the same way we used to 15, 20 years ago? So a couple of texts have come in on this today. Steve, my reason for attending GOP conventions is to connect with statewide activists and meet all the candidates. The endorsed candidate does not always represent our best choice, so the primary could be the best way to support the best person from the Republican Party. The endorsed candidate does not always represent our best choice. Well, why? Why are you endorsing someone who's not the best choice? I don't understand that. Conventions help us find leaders, but also workers for campaigns and hearing their plans for the future. Well, that I believe. That's, I think, a really good point, just different voices. But if the voices that you're hearing are all from the kind of non-establishment candidates, then are you really getting the full story? Because I'm guessing that Julie Fedorchik would have had a story to tell at the North Dakota Republican Convention. She felt she wasn't welcome to share it, apparently, or it wasn't worth her time. Now, you can say, well, that's her fault, yes, and that's true. But if your convention is to be able to hear all the perspectives, then why would you not want to hear that message? And it sounds like from what I'm reading and hearing that those messages are not welcome at these state conventions. Steve, signs for Dave Pepcorn are plentiful in South Fargo near the Boulder. Okay, good, good. That's good to hear. Steve, a crony capitalist and faux conservative like Dave Pepcorn is not a strong candidate. He never saw an incentive tax break or Renaissance zone he didn't like, leaving taxpayers on the hook for millions who voted to extend paying for useless things like the Human Rights Commission and who voted with the leftists on the commission countless times. Oh, there's a lot there. I get what you're saying about some of the things, but I think I'm about as conservative as they come, but I still think there's room for these incentives. You're giving up nothing. You're giving up nothing with these incentives. You're basically just saying, okay, for the next 10, 15 years, we have to be able to operate the city without spending like drunken sailors. And when we do that, if we can do that, we will then have a large amount of money coming through for a development and all the real estate taxes come through on that that we would not have had before. So why would you not do that? That to me is an investment of a certain, but you're not even writing out a check. You're just saying we got to watch our spending for the next few years and then these things kick in and then the money comes our way. Now, like I've said many times before, we can argue about is it 10, 15 years or whatever, or does the money have to be repaid if the developer sells out? All that's fair. But I think to say that Dave is not a conservative because he is in favor of investing in the commercial base in the city is going to pay you a lot more money later. That's how I see it, too. Now, not everyone, every time, I get it. But if you're saying let's get rid of all of these programs, you're going to create then an aura of Fargo where it's not as friendly to build. And that's not helpful to anybody either. Okay, let's get to the best thing I heard all day here because I want to make sure that we don't rush this through. There is something about American pride that this president seems to understand. These days, there seems to be a push from the left that makes you feel like if you appreciate and like or even just tolerate traditional American culture and history, you are racist and outdated, and your voice should be silenced. But I've wondered to myself, as the president has said, we are going to refurbish some of these monuments, some of these fountains, these pools, with America 250, our country's birthday, We're going to bring some of these things back. And if you're an immigrant and you come to this country, don't you want to see nice things too? Like, does this have to be all like evil white people that want to do these things and, you know, put their stomp on the black man? I would think the black people in our society want to see nice things too. But of course, this always turns into, oh, you just want something that was popular in the 1950s because our country was all white people back then. But don't we all want cleanliness in our society? I do. Don't we want order in our society? Don't we want things that are not in disrepair and broken down laying around us? I get it. That's how it is in a lot of the world where some people come to our country from. It's a little more chaotic than this, but it's not wrong, my friend, to say, I appreciate the traditional things about America. Clean streets, happy, friendly people. If that can be done, white people, black people, red people, yellow people, it doesn't matter. But we had a pride, a civic pride in our country, our society, back 50 years ago. And now as we're getting to America 250, it seems like the president is trying to make all this popular again and remind us that we can have high standards for our community and what that looks like. So Interior Secretary Doug Burgum was on Fox News Channel, and he's triggering the liberals after confirming that 22 fountains and 48 monuments and statues are being 100% restored in D.C.
Well, and again, that idea came from President Trump, American flag blue. He was trying to optimize for, it is called the reflecting pool for a reason. 8 acres, one of the largest pools like it in the world, and it's going to be spectacular when it's done. But under President Trump, again, sign an executive order, make D.C. safe and beautiful. If we're the greatest country in the world, let's have the safest and most beautiful capital in the world. The projects are going on, like the one that you discussed at Columbus Circle, complete 180-degree change from what we inherited in the Biden administration. But that's happened. That's one of 22 fountains that are being restored, over 48 monuments and statues being restored, regilded. All the parks, Triangle and Circle Parks around the city, belong to the National Park Service. The team there has done an incredible job. That's part of the Department of Interior. But again, kudos to everything that everybody's doing. This city is going to look better than it ever has as we head into the celebration of the USA and the Freedom 250.
With all of the things that we spend money on, and I think this applies to a lot of different things. This kind of applies to the conversation about the tax incentives for commercial developers too. It's like, if you want to point out this and say, oh, we got a spending problem because of this. No, we have a spending problem because we are putting money behind things that don't help us. They do not show any pathway toward a successful society. At the local level, you talk about needle programs and, you know, drug enablement centers and things like that. At the DC level, are you going to really look at the spending that's happened from that city, that state, our country's government, in the blue cities especially, and say, oh, we've got a problem here because we're spending all this money to refurbish the public venues that we have? No. That's not why we have a spending problem. If we're going to spend money on things, these things make sense. More next. From the email box, good morning, Steve. I want to remind my fellow Fargo residents to get out and vote. The ability to vote is one of the many things that makes America great. I'm looking forward to door knocking with my friend John Wilson, who made me pay attention to elections. Have a great day and God bless. That's from Saidu, who sent an email in. Saidu's last name happens to be Kamara, as does our next guest. It's all Kamaras all the time, apparently, here on the Steve Alstrom Show this morning. A.K. Kamara, occasional guest on the program and a good friend over the years, kind enough to give us a few minutes to break down what has been happening in the Minnesota GOP. So first of all, AK, you don't happen to have a younger brother, Saidu. I know you've got some North Dakota roots, who lives up here in Fargo-Moorhead?
No. So Kamara is a super prominent last name in basically Sierra Leone and parts of Liberia. And so they're probably like some like distant clan relative or something like that.
Okay.
But my two younger brothers are Aziz and Latif, and they both live down here in the city. So.
All right. All right. Well, good. Well, we love the mix of perspectives. It's awesome. And I love it when we have people that obviously have roots in another part of the world who have come here and who've decided to get involved. And we especially like when they're door knocking with good conservatives. So we'll take it where we can get it. Yeah. So, okay.
Absolutely.
So AK, you're kind of my go-to when I have to try to make sense of Minnesota politics because it gets difficult sometimes. I'm just going to let you go here. There was some discrepancy, some technology glitches and whatever. And it's got a lot of people asking a lot of different questions. Were you there in Duluth over the weekend? And whether you were or whether you weren't, what were your takeaways from what you heard there?
Yeah, not only was I there, I'm one of the party officers. So, you know, the convention center holds about 2,000 delegates on the floor. And then, you know, how many ever alternates? Let's say there was 500 alternates that were up in the gallery. And I was on a raised platform at the very front, so I quite literally had a over-the-top view of everything, and obviously being part of the five statewide party elected officers, you know, I have kind of insight into everything. And so, yeah, I have a lot of ideas and opinions, not speaking on behalf of the Republican Party of Minnesota, speaking as myself, that just happens to be, again, the Republican National Committee, man.
Yeah, so, okay, so the two big races we're all watching are governor and U.S. Senate, Michelle Tafoya, Adam Schwartzy for the Senate, and then Kendall Qualls, Lisa Damuth. That's how it came down on the governor's side. It ends up to be Qualls and Schwartzy, where all the people that I'm reading, like polling, news sites or whatever, I hear things like, gosh, we can finally win elections with Lisa Damuth and Michelle Tafoya, and neither of them won. What does this mean, and what does it say about our convention? And can Qualls and can Schwartzy, can they win in a primary?
Yeah, I mean, listen, people need to understand that Minnesota is one of a handful of states left in the, you know, the 50 states and six territories that operate a Republican Party where we have an endorsement that actually matters, because of how everything is spaced out. So we have a late primary. Our primary is usually it's the first Tuesday after the first Monday in August. And because of that, the actual endorsement of the Republican Party through the delegate process holds a lot of weight. In fact, if you look back over the course of the last 40 years, there's only been one unendorsed statewide Republican candidate who actually went to win the primary, and that was sitting governor Arne Carlson, when he got all squishy and the delegates got together and said, we are not endorsing the incumbent sitting governor. Instead, they went with Alan Quist. Alan Quist lost. So ultimately, that's how Minnesota is formed up. Now, what happened this weekend is that when the body, you know, all of the delegates we call the body come together, they vote on everything to proceed forward. So they vote on the rules for the convention. They vote on the agenda for the convention, and that means that if there are disagreements of what should happen, the body votes on it, and once the body votes on it, most of these take at least 50%, and if you want to then later on change and suspend the rules, it requires two-thirds of the delegates there to actually support it. So it's a very great system that allows for rules, that allows for fairness. And the truth of the matter is the body voted not once, not twice, but three times throughout the entire convention to not go to paper ballots, two times after some type of irregularities were actually, you know, identified, talked about. Two times after that happened, people, the body, still voted that they wanted to continue forward using the electronic voting. So this is just the way that things work. And I had a conversation with a lot of folks, and I said, if you're upset about this, then you need to go and talk to your fellow delegates. I am not going to put my thumb on the scale. I abstain from voting. And I said, whatever the will of the body is, and that's what happened.
The big question I have is, are the two candidates that were endorsed at the convention, do they really have the best shot, AK, at winning the primary in this case when we're talking about Qualls? Nothing against these two gentlemen. We've had them on the show. They're wonderful guys. I love everything that they're all about. But everybody tells me that they're underdogs in a primary. Can they win?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not trying to be snakeish. It's just this is how important to me our actual endorsement and caucus system is. And I'm just going to give you just a quick, real understanding. The reason why this we're one of the last states that has this caucus endorsement is it truly empowers the grassroots. And what are the grassroots? It's not just people that go out and vote on Election Day. We need all of those people. But it's the people that say, I'm going to take the time to show up and to actually be a participant, an elected officer in some way, shape, or form of the organizing body of the local Republicans. And those people who are most invested with time and energy are who are choosing who the endorsed candidates are going to be. And again, maybe that's just an old timey thing and we're going to go away from it. But through that process, everyone has a fair shake to initially send people to caucus and then to win them over throughout the entire process when they become delegates and then at the convention to win them over. So if you can't win in a group of the people that are scattered throughout this entire state, a very eclectic group. Anyone can show up to caucus. There are people that are considered more constitutionalist. There are people that are considered more MAGA. Some people are considered more libertarian. But that from that wide swath, if you can't get a majority, 60% of the people to vote for you, I think there's a strong argument that you might have a hard time being able to actually win against a much broader coalition of people. So here's my answer, is that if the body of delegates, of 2,000-plus delegates, decides that this is going to be who we have, that's what the body decided. Now, because we do have a primary, if whomever is left, you know, Tafoya or, you know, again, looking at Damuth or Lindell or whomever is going to run, if they can convince the larger Republican electorate of people that aren't necessarily going out and knocking doors, but instead make sure that they vote religiously every 2-4 years, and they can convince them, then we, going forward past the primary, will support that candidate. So that's kind of the way that I look at it. It's not necessarily to me about who's more electable. Obviously, they were more electable to that body, that very, very diverse coalition of delegates all across the state of Minnesota to be able to win.
It's going to be really interesting. Can't wait to watch it all unfold. Going to be a very interesting summer. AK, thanks a ton for the time. You gave us the most important stuff that I was really looking for there. So thank you for taking the time to help us sort it out. You take care, bud, okay?
You too. Take care.
Thanks, AK. We'll see you later. More on the Steve Hallstrom Show after this. What is happening in our schools is obviously a big concern for many of us. It's been a large talking point for us on the program over time. And whenever things are happening within our schools that affect our kids and technology, it's worth leaning into that conversation. We're pleased to welcome to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line State Superintendent Levi Bachmeyer, and he joined with a handful of other state Republicans and state leaders last week to kick off a survey to try to find out where we go with education and technology in our classrooms going forward. And Secretary Bachmeyer has been, Superintendent Bachmeyer, has been good enough to join us here on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hi, Levi. How are you doing?
Hey, good morning, Steve. I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. So I like this subject and trying to figure out how we handle school in a way that allows our students to grow up with technology while also using it in a responsible way. So tell me a little bit about what you're doing here.
Yeah, I mean, the goal is a recognition of everything that I'm learning, visiting schools all across the state, hit over 50 this, you know, in the spring of 2026. And this is probably the most common theme that has emerged, or one of them at least. And it's, we have an obligation to equip students with the technological skills that they need to succeed in today's world. But whether you've read The Anxious Generation or have just been really following along with the, you know, the discourse amongst young people, technology is not an only good thing. And so the challenge for us is to figure out how do we have it focused to improve instruction, but minimize the downsides, reduce the distractions, and make sure that it's a tool, not a toy.
So Levi, some people might listen to you say that and say, okay, I get that there's a conversation to be had, but I'm worried about big government, and government always wants to try to put in a new program or take some time and resources to study something that maybe people, if you just got a collection of people around the state to come to Bismarck for a day, could kind of hammer out an understanding or a path forward. Why do this particular avenue? And then what do you say to the people that feel like, oh, this is just some other government program that's going to end up costing us a lot of money here?
Yeah, I think it's funny. It's because it costs us nothing. You know, the state already has, you know, the ability to put out a Microsoft Forum survey. I built it myself at 9 o'clock at night last Wednesday. We're promoting it out on our public Facebook page. So it costs nothing to listen to people. And so if you do it the right way, which I'm a big believer in, so it takes people maybe 2 minutes to fill it out. There's some open-ended questions if people want to add some comments. I've been amazed by the response. We already have over 2,500 respondents from all corners of the state, rural areas, large communities. And I think it's just an important part of any time that policymakers are talking about big topics. And this is one of the biggest, that you've got good data in the room, and we now have tools that allow us to ask people what they think for free, which is what we're doing.
Anytime we get it done for free, that's a smart way to do it. Have you been able to gather any responses so far about what some of the early returns have been on this survey, or is it too early to tell?
Yeah, I was looking over the weekend. We've got, like I said, I was blown away. I know this is something that people care about. Like I said, I've been visiting school districts all spring as the new state superintendent, and this has been coming up everywhere. So I expected people to care about it, but we just launched this thing. It was after lunchtime on Thursday, so it hasn't even been 2 full business days. We already have over 2,500 responses. And if I had to summarize what I'm seeing so far in the data, it's people are skeptical, and they are especially skeptical with our youngest students. And so I'm just grateful for the people who have already taken the time. I would encourage anyone who's listening, you can go on the Department of Public Instruction's website, look at the press release that was put out last Thursday, or go on our Facebook page. A lot of media outlets have been great, directly linking the survey just to their news story. Whether you're a current parent, a former parent, a current student, a teacher, you work in schools, you care about your grandkids, I mean, I would love to hear what you think, and it's going to be open through August 1st. And based on what we've seen so far, I think people, I'd say that we're seeing what I expected, that people understand that technology has to be a part of education, but there's, I think, a healthy skepticism, and especially with our youngest learners, I want to see kids, I think you're going to be better at the basics, like reading and math, making sure that you're spending just as much time outside at recess as you are, you know, staring at a personalized technology device.
Yeah, interesting. Is there a specific, to me, when I read this, it feels like we're trying to mainly, and again, this is an ignorant perspective, but I just don't know. It feels like maybe we're trying to figure out how the phone interacts with our students. But it feels like, just listening to you talk about this, that it's more than just phones. It's other technologies. Is this like an AI kind of an initiative? Is this a how do we handle phones or, you know, Chromebooks? Or what specifically are we trying to get under the hood with here, Levi?
Yeah, great question. So phones, I think we've more or less taken that off the table during the school day, right? You just can't have them. So this is, I would say, really trying to understand around the school-issued devices. So some schools issue Chromebooks, some issue iPads. Should there be any restrictions or parameters for school districts in terms of how those school-issued devices are ultimately used? Because, you know, this is an ongoing conversation. My wife and I both as, you know, those who work in education and you know, the parent of two girls, you know, this is a conversation that has to be had at home or on the dinner table, because most of the time that young people spend during the day is not at school, but obviously that's a big chunk of their day as well. And so how are schools being responsible with the devices that they're putting in young people's hands is what I'm especially interested in. Just to sort of tie it to your question about cell phones, there were some really interesting comments. I've asked high school kids everywhere I've gone what their, you know, response to the new cell phone bill has been, and it almost universally positive. There's always been a couple detractors, but on the whole, people said it hasn't been a big deal, or it's been good. But there have been a couple comments that I've found especially interesting where they said, okay, yeah, maybe they're not scrolling social media or they're not sitting on YouTube on their cell phone anymore, but they're just doing it on their school-issued device, which tells me that we've got some more work to do to make sure that the focus in our schools is on learning and not all the other distractions that come with technology.
Yeah, really smart. What is the biggest, is there like one big smoking gun burning question that you're really just personally curious about? Maybe a certain kind of technology or a certain use or a certain age group of students? Is there anything in particular that, you know, I'm kind of interested in all of it, but there is a part that I am really curious to find out how this response comes back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in all of them, and maybe it's just my bias. I've got a 2.5-year-old and a 10-month-old at home. I'm especially skeptical about putting, you know, personalized devices in the hands of our youngest children. And so we've got a question asking people whether or not they think there should be an hour, you know, a limit, a daily limit to the amount of one-to-one device usage that students can be exposed to. So this isn't to say that, you know, if a teacher is standing up at the front of the room and they're using a projector, that doesn't count. It's if we're putting a device in their hands that they have individualized control over, that could be taking them anywhere on the internet, or things that are helpful. You know, there's a lot of really helpful educational technology out there, but there's just as much unhelpful and dangerous things out there. And so I'm especially interested with our youngest learners. I think the more that we dig into just sort of the research and what we're learning is that individualized education devices are probably not necessary or even important or even frankly all that helpful with our youngest learners. So there's a question about limits on use for our kindergarten, first and second graders. And that's the one that I think there are all the questions are important, but that one I am going to be especially curious to see what people think.
Many of us who have children in the public school district or have had kids go through public schools have been very much concerned with an attitude that seems to be growing in our minds that school officials, teachers, board members, superintendents, whomever, it seems that in certain niches, certain parts, certain places, we're getting this attitude that we know better than you do about what education should look like for your child. So I'm really encouraged by this because this is you as the leader of public education in the state saying, yes, mom and dad, yes, grandma and grandpa, aunts and uncles, yes, we do want to hear what parents, that they are your kids, not ours, and we do care what people think about what we're doing with their kids in school. These are not our children. Was any part of that like a conscious piece of the thought process going in on that, or is that just kind of something that came together maybe by accident during this whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think just look at who was really sort of the driving force behind this. Legislators like Jim Jonas, who's been a teacher and a school board member and a coach, Senator Axman, who's been working on education policy and cares deeply about kids, myself, having been a teacher, coach, and administrator. And I think, you know, your comment is true. It's less true in North Dakota than in other places for sure. I'm a big believer that education is a team sport. Schools should not be raising children. But everyone has a role to play. And so trying to get everybody around the table, putting their heads together and saying, hey, how can we best support our kids? I'm not an expert on how to teach a 6-year-old to read. And so I look forward to our public school system helping my young daughters, you know, do that. But what my role is in reading to them at home and supporting them to make sure that they're getting their work done, I mean, that is my responsibility. So parents have rights, they have responsibilities. Schools have an obligation to serve their communities, which is working in partnership with parents. And I think that's one of the reasons why North Dakota, if you look at national test scores that compare us to other parts of America, we are towards the top in most of them, especially in math. We're like at the top. But I think we can't take this stuff for granted, and some of the stupid things that are happening in other parts of the country, I don't want to happen here. And so we're going to move forward working together with parents, and that's helped us get to where we are. And I think that's what we need if we want to be the best school system in the nation. And I believe that we can be.
Where do we find this survey if we want to take a look and get involved ourselves?
Yeah, go ahead and you can head to the Department of Public Instruction's website, or you can find our Facebook page. We recently posted it on Thursday, and we'll be continuing to refresh it and push it to the top there so people have an opportunity to to have their voice heard between now and August 1st.
Very good. Hey, thanks for taking the time, Levi. It's a great idea, and I love it when people at the ground level of North Dakota have a chance to make their voice heard like this. So thanks for doing that. Thanks for including our state in the way that you have on this.
Well, appreciate it, Steve. Thanks for having me. Education is a team sport, and when we stick to the basics and work together, great things can happen for our kids. So yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, you bet. Thanks so much, Levi. Take care.
Take care. Thanks.
North Dakota State Superintendent of Public Education, Levi Bachmeyer. Don't lose sight of that. Here's a guy who's telling you, hey, we get it. We get your kids for a little while every day, but they're still your kids. And for the state's top education leader to be saying that and doing that, I think that's not nothing for sure. Back with more after this. Time for a phone call or two before the show ends. How much stock do you put into the sign game when it comes to local elections? As I was around town quite a bit here over this past weekend, I noticed that in some areas I saw a lot of Michelle Turnberg signs. Some areas on the half marathon route on Saturday running, I saw a lot of Josh Boshay signs. And there were places where Turnberg signs far outweighed the Boshay signs, and then vice versa. And I'm wondering how much stock you put into that. How much does that really matter? My sense is it has something. There's something there. But I've seen before where it really felt like a local race, that one person, they spent a lot of money and put out a lot of signs, but it just hadn't tapped into who the people in that community were. It was just an expenditure. I'm wondering if you feel like the sign game is an indicator of anything. Let me know what you think on that, 271-1100. Hey, if you are thinking of buying a car anytime soon, I'd encourage you to go to drivewithvision.com. And it might actually be a lot of fun to drive down to Wahpeton to Vision Ford Lincoln and check out all the great vehicles they've got on their lot down there, the Lincolns, the Fords. They've got them all. And they also have 18 service drivers that will come up to Fargo and get your vehicle when something needs to be taken care of in the shop. 18 service drivers. They're zipping up and down I-29 left and right, getting cars back and forth. And if you've got an oil change that needs to be done, they've got a mobile oil change crew that comes out. They'll do it in the parking lot of your vehicle. You just give them the keys and, okay, here you go. They get the job done for you. They make it easy. DriveWithVision.com. Great job opportunities, too. DriveWithVision.com. All right, let's get to your comments here while if you're picking up the phone, giving us a call, do it quick because we're running out of time, but we'd love to hear from you what your impressions are of any of these races here locally. You can talk about the convention, state conventions, too. And if we're getting to a point where the state conventions just don't matter as much as they used to, I kind of feel like we're there. This might be a cyclical thing that kind of comes and goes. Emailer Gene, it's been crazy work. I missed the first half of the Steve Hallstrom show. Oh, no. Gene, no, I get it. Hey, life is busy. I don't get to listen to hardly any of this stuff on our station during the course of the day because we're working. But when you can get a chance to, glad that that you try to check it out. Yes, Gene, a few ways to do that. Coming up later today, you'll be able to get the show archive on am1100theflag.com. What I do with a lot of shows that I want to catch is I go to Spotify and some of the podcasting platforms like Apple, whatever their thing is for your iPhone. They've got a platform for podcasts too. Stitcher is another one. And you can find our stuff on all those places. Spotify probably the easiest one to check that out. So, yeah, if you miss a show, you don't have to miss a show. Coming up later in the day or the next day, you can check that out. I think it usually takes till like right around supper time for the shows to be posted normally. JT can correct me if I need to be corrected on this one. Note from our newsroom, XL Energy is reporting nearly 3,000 people are without power in Fargo. So we had a little power outage going on here. They're estimating 11:45 will be the restoration time on this one. So thank you to Chris in our newsroom who just bopped in with that one, making sure that we knew that. So, yeah, you might come home and all the clocks are goofy. Emailer Dan, Steve, when Michelle Turnberg said she would return Fargo to providing necessities and not social services and would partner with other agencies to have services provided to Fargo's mentally ill, drug addicted, and homeless, she means it. She is already talking to people who are in position to partner with Fargo to provide services on day one. She's already working, not just saying things that sound nice. Okay, Dan, thanks for weighing in on that one there. Appreciate you shooting that our direction. Steve, I swear Dave Pepcorn was a Democrat nominee in recent years for the Senate or governor or something, wasn't he? No, you're thinking of Merrill Pepcorn, who ran as the Democrat, I think, for governor against Kelly Armstrong a couple of years ago. And Merrill, another guy, a pretty good dude. He's a North Dakota Democrat. He's not a wacko liberal, but he's had no chance in that race there. So, no, you're thinking of somebody different. There's been a lot of talk about Dave and that they think that Dave is not as conservative. I think Dave's solid, you guys. I do. I know he's made statements on, you know, let the Human Rights Commission kind of do their thing once or twice and about the Renaissance zones and whatever. But, I mean, there's nobody that has been pounding the table longer and harder on government spending than Dave. And the idiocy of all of these programs that we're paying for. So I think Dave is solid. I do. I don't have any issues. I mean, if he's our next mayor, oh boy, we will have dodged a major bullet there. Steve, thank the Lord that Doug Burgum helped our president clean up our nation's capital. Fixing the reflecting pool and fountains just makes sense. Millions of visitors are in D.C. They deserve to see it clean and graffiti-free. Fixing the broken sidewalks and fountains is a sign that Doug and his team care. I'm with you on that one. I'm with you. Steve, too much money is being spent on schools rather than teachers helping students excel in reading and math across the state. Student failures is a problem. Well, I think this is part of that, though. Trying to get a sense for the technology pieces. So I think they're giving a good effort. Could more be done? Sure, they'll tell you that, too. But something in the right direction, and they're saying we care about you, the people. Have a good day. Keep on flying that flag.